ahead and get started. Just our basic kind of updates and agenda items that we typically look at. And then we also have some
join the meeting
as well that I want all of your feedback around. So in terms of where we are with the data,
join the meeting.
This is kind of the number of referrals. So it's been a month since I've pulled this data, or just shy of a month since I've pulled the data. So you can see, certainly we're averaging about 50 referrals across the state on a weekly basis. Not surprisingly, with the majority of those coming into Hartford, New Haven, Fairfield, and Northwest Connecticut. I will say that your staff have done an amazing job, maybe even some of you, getting the enrollments into HMIS. We've had to start doing quarterly reporting to HUD now on this program and all of our ESG funding. So it's really nice to be able to see the substantial uptick in the number of households who have been enrolled in the project. And so again, like over the course of the past month, overall as a state, we've had an increase of about 284 people enrolled, which is huge. So that could either be that we're obviously doing a better job about getting the data into HMIS, but I think it could also be that people that we were waiting on determining eligibility for got the paperwork into us that was needed to confirm their eligibility. So I'm assuming, but tell me if there's other factors as well that we should be thinking about. But probably those two factors are really what's driving up the increases in HMIS. So that is great. Also, what is really nice is that we have started to be able to see some discharges from the project as well, which is my hope that, you know, for some of our lesser need households or the households who have not been needing case management in an ongoing way, that we would start to discharge some of those people from the project as well. And so, again, not surprisingly, we're seeing that in Hartford. And again, they've had the most inflow into the project. So not surprising that we're seeing a higher number of discharges from them as well. And again, I think kind of the area for us to focus on is really around the use of the SmartSheet. And if people aren't being added to the SmartSheet for some reason, particularly when we're enrolling them into the project in HMIS, like what's that disconnect? And I recognize challenging to remember to do data entry into two systems. But what's important is that the SmartSheet, again, I mean, not only is it our method to be able to refer to other program components, but it's also our ability to collect some additional data that's important to this particular project that's not currently captured in HMIS. So any thoughts or comments on this?
Okay. Julie, it's Felicity. I'd just like to look at MMW's data with you on the side, if that's okay.
Sure. And then also what we pay attention to is the number of appointments coming into the weekly schedule. So again, you know, we've capped appointments at 7. I want to have some additional conversation about what your staff are experiencing in terms of inflow to look at whether or not we need to even reduce that lower per FTE in your regions. You know, right now, numbers don't look particularly high over the past 3 weeks. You know, we're seeing daily averages of 3-5, you know, in some areas it's 2 referrals in some of our smaller regions, it's an average of 1 appointment being added per day. So certainly in the smaller regions, I think it would seem to be manageable. I think we knew that as we went along with the project that we would need to tweak some of this and really determine what the capacity is. And some of what we've already talked about is that this population is slightly a bit different than what we, than the group of individuals and families that we work with on the CAN side that tend to have more instability, right? Like these are people that are probably going to be following up. There's more follow-up with the landlords needed, et cetera. Any questions in terms of the number of appointments being scheduled?
Not a question necessarily, but just something that I want to assess because, you know, in terms of 30 days out from when the cap was set, if the data of entry will become more manageable because of the follow-up needed for those before the cap. And just something that we're going to look at because I think this week coming up will be the 30-day mark for the weeks that we had a much higher inflow. And so following up with those clients and then in those landlords and seeing if after that group, if it becomes easier for data management.
Are you talking about, Allison, like that we, if we don't hear back from people within 30 days, that we close them out? Is that it?
Yeah. And so that was, I think this is the week that will mark the 30-day mark for when we started that daily cap. So that should be the last of the bulk when we got the bulk referrals. So once those ones are either accepted or denied based on returning eligibility documents, I want to reassess to see if it becomes more manageable for the data piece because it is kind of overwhelming for at least what my staff has shared. And I am helping with data entry too.
Okay. Okay. And so in terms of case management referrals, you know, I think we're starting to creep up on where we should be, but also still seeing some opportunity for capacity in some of the regions. It looks like in the Northwest, and Anastasia or Adam, you could speak to this. It looks like you took some off. I know you had done a little bit more thorough review of the individuals that have been reviewed. And so it looks like some of those kind of got taken off of the roster of case management, so to speak. But I just wanted to make sure I'm assuming correctly.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Anastasia and I, we've been diligently looking at each case a little bit more and you know, putting those clients in the appropriate program. So yeah, we've been doing a lot of swapping out and either my program or her program. So yeah, we've been doing a little cleanup.
Yeah. Okay. And one of the things I think we're talking about in terms of case management, and some of you guys have raised this, is really about applying critical time intervention models to the caseloads, particularly because when we have new referrals, those are individuals that are going to require more time. They have greater needs, right, because they're in that acute crisis. And then trying to look at how to balance those caseloads. Some of your agencies have already, at some level, use critical time intervention models. I'm just wondering if, from your perspective, we need to have more conversation about that, some additional training, either for all of you so that you can help balance those caseloads for your staff, or do we also, you know, do some of that training for your direct staff as well?
So I would just say, as not a service provider, but just with experience to CTI, I actually love the idea. I think that could really help case managers feel a little more in control of the services, right? Because I think because of a new program, you kind of feel like everything is all over the place. And so I do think that this may help kind of streamline, because if you take a step back from CTI, although it seems really overwhelming, it's almost like you have certain just things that you want to check off in each phase that you're accomplishing to kind of transition to the next phase. So it feels like instead of worrying about the 6 months, right, I'm going to worry about the 2 months, and I'm going to worry about the goals we need to achieve in those 2 months, and then kind of go from there. And it allows you to tailor your length of time. So almost I'm envisioning, and I'm thinking, Lee, you're envisioning the same thing, like replicating what we did in wraparound housing with the length of time and everything. Okay.
And years ago, when we had started to use CTI with rapid rehousing, so CTI is supposed to be a 9-month model, kind of set up at 3-month intervals to help move people through stages. Of course, depending on the particular tenants, they can move through those stages more quickly. With Housing Innovations, we had adapted the model to a 6-month model, which again would fit well with our expected maximum case management length of time for individuals. Again, they could move through the steps more quickly based on need, but we might be able to apply some of those same principles here. So I think several of the providers, like I'm thinking about Anastasia, your staff, certainly kind of having that dual role as a rapid rehousing provider. Allison, I'm not sure how much you've used it in terms of your work at New Reach, but I'm imagining you guys are starting to see some potentials for overlap with CTI with this project as well. Okay, I see some heads nodding. How much have your staff participated with CTI?
So for me, my rapid rehousing case managers participate with CTI, but for this project, so for the housing specialists, we're more so in that pre-phase. So it's more of just figuring out their housing crisis, immediately. But for the case management, I do think it's a great idea. The only concern I'm thinking about is the weighted caseload. So would that reduce the number of clients they'll be able to serve at a particular time?
Correct.
It would, okay.
Yeah. And I think what you would have to like play around with, and I think really kind of that best practice that you've developed with Adam is around really that case reviews that you guys are doing. I forget, is it weekly or weekly, right? Or bi-weekly?
Bi-weekly.
Yeah. To really identify like what's the capacity, who's in which phase, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that you can more better assess how many new people you can take on.
Gotcha, yeah, that makes sense.
So it sounds like, because I know CTI will be new for several of you, and certainly for your direct service staff, that we should probably just do one large training, kind of carve out. I would hope that we could do it kind of a crash course in it. But perhaps adding that as part of one of our
join the meeting
management meetings, and then we would ask that you guys join that meeting.
This is Casey from Inspirica. Yeah, I definitely think we would benefit from that a lot. I know that, like, I oversee it, and I've never actually had any CTI training. Like, we've already gone over pretty much everything I know about CTI in this like 5-minute conversation. So I would love it, and I know that. I know that our case manager, I'm 90% sure he's never had it. So I think it would be very beneficial for us. Because we had talked about the concept, I do think that a weighted caseload would be very helpful. So I think, yeah, that would be really helpful for us.
Okay, great. Okay, anything on this before we move on? Okay. And so then just in terms of our mediation referrals, obviously they are going up. But I also would expect that the numbers would be higher at this point in time. And so again, looking for your feedback, I'm assuming that some of it is around paperwork and determining eligibility before we can refer to mediation. Am I assuming correctly?
Yes and no. Good morning.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. I had connectivity issues, but yes and no, because sometimes when the client already comes in, they already have a plan with the landlord. They have already negotiated terms with the landlord. So it's yes and no.
And just to clarify, they've negotiated terms with the landlord because they've already negotiated, correct?
Could you repeat that for me, Lee?
They've already negotiated terms with the landlord because they're working with legal aid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And some of that, I think, like we've talked about, is that we are getting referrals for people who are further along, right, in the court process, yes, than I think we had originally anticipated. And so by the time they're getting referred to HPP, they've already gone to court, perhaps they've already been working with the legal aid attorney for some time, etc. So that makes sense.
I'm hearing from our central providers, Lee, that the landlords are absolutely unwilling to pursue mediation. Like they want nothing to do with mediation. So I've been trying to get them to, you know, provide them with scripts to use with landlords and stuff like that. But in general, they're getting shot down a lot by landlords.
That's true too. That's very
true. Because of mediation, or because once they hear they're not getting 100% of their arrears, they are done. So we're trying to leverage various programs. We're lucky enough to have, you know, multiple prevention programs. But again, when you're tapping into 2, 3, 4, 5 different programs, whatever you need to get the landlord 100%, that just takes a lot of time and it's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
For us, more often than not, the clients are looking to relocate rather than stay. So that's why it's more of a referral to case management than it is to mediation. So some of our mediation referrals are for extending that stay, but not necessarily for continuing it, because as Amanda said too, a lot of the landlords are hesitant. We have a few that turn down HPP because they're waiting on Unite CT and things like that as well, thinking that they might get more out of Unite CT.
Okay. And I know there's also, and Berta, maybe you want to touch upon this. I think what we're also seeing is challenges with habitability for the units that people are currently in. I know, Lorraine, your staff ran into some of these issues this week where, you know, landlords aren't paying for a water bill. There's no electricity in the unit, all of these kind of conditions where rodent infestation, where frankly, I would be surprised that a person would want to stay in that apartment. But I also respect that moving is kind of a nuisance as well. So
I think that's more the case.
What's that moving's kind of a pain, Lorraine?
Yes. Yeah, even though the conditions are subpar, moving is a pain that they don't necessarily want to go through. So they're rather just, you know, hanging there, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, and I also think the reality of units is becoming more clear, because we were chatting yesterday locally and we've had clients who originally are like, I want to move. And then when they realize it's actually not that easy or there's nothing they can afford, they're like, oh, forget it, I'll stay. So we've seen a little bit of that too.
Yeah, that's definitely the biggest issue in our area, is just there's no units. I mean, landlords are saying we're only taking vouchers. We only want Section 8 or Shelter Plus Care until the moratorium's over. We're not taking anyone without guaranteed income, which of course is illegal, but they can come up with 5 other reasons to not take people because, I mean, we had somebody in Bridgeport that was like, I'm getting 100 calls a day for this room. Like, you guys need to start looking in the Valley or looking somewhere other than here because there's nothing.
And then all the barriers. I mean, we were talking yesterday that I've got a client who has every barrier you can think of. She's got it. And she needs to be rehoused. And I don't know what we're going to be able to do with her. So I think between the barriers and the landlords are able to be so picky right now because they're going to fill their rooms in days or their units in days. That's been a real struggle for us.
Yeah. That's really all very helpful to hear. We're hearing it across all programs, right? And so I think many of you are already working with like a rapid rehousing project, PSH projects that are struggling with the same thing. And now we're adding in another cohort of people, right, that are connected to our system. And so we're all looking at the same units because it's all the same landlord contacts that your housing locators are generating, et cetera. So, this is all we talk about and we've talked about for years, right, is landlord engagement. Bert, is there anything else that you want to touch upon with this?
No, I appreciate the referrals from Anastasia and Christina. The collaboration works really well with them. I've been getting a lot of cases from them. And even when we have the challenges, we just try to work together to figure out if it still can be mediated, then if not, we just figure a plan for it to go back to case management. But the case with Glorimar, I'm probably going to refer that case back because we can't mediate illegal issues. So I'm going to have a conversation with Glorimar today. And then the case with the rodents came from Sari. And everyone is correct when there's nothing out there and the tenant does want to move. But it's my understanding, she says she is not finding anything that's affordable. But the rodent issue, she says it involves the entire block. I don't know how you can fix a rodent infestation if the entire neighborhood in one block is infested. So I think we still may have to come up with a different plan for her, even if it's a temporary agreement.
Yeah, so some of the cases that Berta is talking about, there's been concerns, Frank, that I think are in the jurisdiction of the municipal health department or housing code enforcement cases. And so I think, you know, in some of those cases, it's really thinking about calling on some of those other resources that are available to any tenants in a community. So there was the rodent infestation. And so I think Sari is going to go to housing code enforcement for the city or the health department. I think in Hartford, there was issues with a landlord who was reportedly, the landlord was squatting in a basement of the building. Also some questions about the landlord not paying the water bill. So tenants have been paying the water bill, even though that's included. So pretty unconventional stuff, right? And so I think from a case management perspective, to try to help those tenants, it's also bringing in other housing code enforcement entities to help. Okay, anything else before we move on? So wanted to share with you guys some HMIS updates. And this was thanks to Bobby Jo. She had said, hey, when we do the export in HMIS, can we add in the tenant's email address? So Bobby Jo, that functionality is in as of late last night. HMIS added that to the export, but would you mind talking a little bit about what it is that you were thinking about being able to do with that?
Okay, so yesterday I actually started to triage people coming in, and what I'm doing is taking everybody and emailing them the welcome packet and welcome email as an initial point of contact, and if they don't have an email, calling them, getting their email obviously, and sending it out. But what I did yesterday was everybody who had an email already in through 211 and in through HMIS, I emailed them directly, hi, welcome, here's what's going on, with the purpose of just making that initial quick contact on the day of their appointment. So we can kind of triage with the purpose of get their information and then quickly triage them off to case management, mediation, or are they eligible or not? And actually, in the first day, I made contact with everybody but one person. And the one person's questionable because the voicemail was Spanish and I don't know what the voicemail said. So I kind of got halted there. And I actually received two callbacks from the people I sent the email thanking me for the email, telling me they received it and that they're working on the paperwork. So first day successful. So I'm hoping that going forward, this is going to help speed up everything. So fingers crossed.
Well, so it sounds like through this method, you're avoiding, not that it's bad, right? But it takes up so much time every time you call an individual client and you get their 30 to hour long whole thing and then realize they weren't even eligible or whatever the case
And that's the whole thing. Right. So that's the whole thing. Like even when I had to call the person because we didn't have an email, I said to them, I don't want to sound rude, but I want to cut to the chase, get your email, send you these documents. This is of the utmost importance to get to find out what you're eligible for. Are you eligible for case management, mediation, nothing, something? And if you're not eligible for our program, what are you eligible for? I said, I really want to listen to you, but now's not the time. Now's the time for me to determine where do you fit? And that 45 minute conversation turned into 12 minutes the reason it took so long was because I was actually having difficulty getting her address, getting her email address and getting making sure everything was accurate. And that was just my inability to clearly understand. And that was a little language barrier there. Otherwise, I think the conversation would have been 6 to 8 minutes. And she was very appreciative. And she called me this morning saying, I got the email. I'm on it. Another woman said, I can't print from my email, but send me an email so I have your information and mail it to me. And the conversations, I think everything took in an hour to do six people as opposed to an hour to do one. And, you know, and the person I did talk to who wanted to talk, I said to him, I really want to talk to you and find out more, but I want to do it when I have your information in front of me and I know you're eligible, what you're eligible for. You're a single dad, you're going to be eligible for a lot more than you know, but I don't know until I have the documents because I don't even have the notice to quit because you just got it yesterday. So let's see what's going on. And he's like, absolutely, I understand. And then when you express it to them that way, because we kind of get caught up in the stories and we get so emotionally tied in that we sometimes get blinded by that. And when we become too emotionally in, we become more of, okay, we're going to focus on this person. We're going to focus on this person when we have to just kind of get them in, move them through. Because when we lose the time and the courts don't care, the judges don't care. They're like, whatever, you got three kids, you're going to be homeless, whatever. Judgment towards the landlord. We have to kind of move. So I'm trying to get it to move. And I'm thinking back to my nursing. We have to look at it as, okay, are you bleeding excessively? Are you broken? Are you doing this? You know, I want to know what the triage part is. So I'm really looking at it like that and then moving it through. And then once we get the eligibility, we know, then we can do the wonderful talking about everything. So trying to, because we're right now we're so backlogged with the 130 or 40 something calls that we have, it gets overwhelming. And when you get overwhelmed, you get stressed and anxious, and it just gets out of control. So
I think it's a great idea, Bobby Joe, and I think it sounds like it's really promising because, like you said, it cuts out all of that initial conversation. People are more quickly getting connected to the program, right, and getting a response because they're getting that email, and it gives them that opportunity to be able to get their eligibility documents back to us as quickly as possible. So. And are you essentially, when you're sending them that initial email, is it essentially the language that's in that welcome letter that explains the program, what's needed from them.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty much a shortened version of the welcome letter, and then it's the welcome letter, the cert of eligibility, the releases, and then explain that we need their income or if there's no income, and for every adult in the household. And then my information up, you know, of course, so that they, you know, have any questions. So, you know, just to get it started, get it going, get that conversation of what documents we need. Because again, you know, a lot of people will say, I have no income. Then you find out they do have some income or vice versa. Because I've seen a lot of income entered in HMIS. Then when you talk to the person, there's no income. So sometimes the story in HMIS is different than the story that we get. So.
I just have a quick question. So are you waiting until you get all the documents back before you enroll?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Just because until I actually visibly see, you know, even the notice to quit, unless some of them just got the notice to quit, which is good that they've called, you know, like yesterday. So I don't even know what's going on. So they're just kind of in that standstill. And then once we get the paperwork back, then we'll enroll them and go forward. Because like I said, some people don't respond. Some people, you know, so.
Other questions for Bobby Joe? Is this a practice that you guys are thinking that you would want to adopt locally for your region?
Are you waiting to ask the questions that you do the initial referral processing until they get the paperwork to you as well? Or are you still doing that phone call?
Right, so after I get the paperwork, that's what I'm gonna do, determine, you know, that they're where they're going to go, either case management, mediation, that's when I'll do that, those questions, and then kind of send them off. So if you think about it in the sense of actual triage, if we were face to face and could get everything, the triage would actually be, okay, what's the situation? Give me all your documents. You would review it. And then you would kind of say, okay, you're going to case management, or you're going to case management mediation, or you're going here. And you would do that all at one time, but because you kind of, we're doing it piecemeal, it's something that I'm doing. My plan is, okay, once I see, okay, there's an income, there's this, what is your goal? Then it's going to go, we're going to do the assessment. I'm going to enroll and I'll know which direction to send. And then that way, if it goes to case management, or Essence is going to then take over and do the further to go to mediation, or are they not eligible? We've already had a couple of people who aren't even eligible. So it just kind of depends on which direction, and hoping that this will kind of be a quicker, smoother process. Again, in an ideal world, people would come to us with an appointment with paperwork. So, and one of the big things that I'm finding is, you know, there's a lot of people who can't print. So that's why I'm sending them the fillable PDFs. So hopefully they can do that either on their phone or on the computer. And then all they have to do is try to take pictures of their income or their lease, if they have the lease, and get that back. So.
Great. And I know, and I can't remember if we've talked about it here or if we have talked about it with your staff, but I think in terms of the lease, I know that has been tricky, either because people have an expired lease, they've lost it, they only had a verbal lease when they took occupancy of the unit. If we can't get a copy of the lease, I don't want that to be a holdup for offering assistance to the tenant. And certainly if you're referring to mediation, it's just less of her to know, like, I, you know, the lease is not available, and she won't look for it when she's doing the referral. But that should not be the holdup to be able to assist. And certainly, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about is around landlords who are just unresponsive, right? And I think, you know, in general, we're probably waiting too long for a response from the landlord as opposed to taking next steps or helping the tenant with next steps. But before I move on to that conversation, I know, Amanda, you had put in the chat, hearing technology is a significant barrier to, or having technology is a significant barrier for households. You know, many aren't good with technology, emails, etc. I mean, have you guys, I know Allison put in the chat that they have started doing more things by mail and confirming when you send it off to tenants. You know, I know some of your agencies are still open where people can drop materials off. You know, I'm just wondering what else people have done to try to get around that technology barrier, if there's anything that you guys can share with each other.
Sometimes staff will meet the client or the tenant or the landlord where they are. If they are not able to come into the office, if they are not able to email whatever documents, you know, anything to expedite the process, you know, we'll go the extra mile. I'm not recommending that everybody do that, but I'm just saying what we've done at South Park.
Yep. And, you know, libraries are starting to open back up.
Yes.
Support centers are also open for people to be able to access technology like scanning computers, fax machines, etc. So there are places where people can go. I know it's not ideal. I think the additional barrier is people's knowledge about how to use that technology, right? That is also a challenge. So I think it's probably tailoring the service based on that person's needs and what their capabilities are, right? Just like we would do with everything else. And Amanda had asked, if a client can't get documentation of the income, they can self-certify. So if someone can't get it for whatever reason, they can self-certify. And again, like low barrier, it can just be an email saying that is fine. They could send you a letter in the mail, but you know, whatever they need to do to self-certify, handwritten, I will take it. It's really about low barrier for people. All right. Anything else before I move us along? All right.
Just Bobby Joe. I just want to ask, could you share your welcome packet? I don't know if you changed, it sounds like you changed it a little bit from what some of the materials that were shared earlier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right, so talking about inflow in general, right? This is big topic for us. I think we have talked about barriers to access or in documentation throughout our discussion this morning, so I'm not going to put a lot of emphasis on that right now. But I do want to stress, and if you can really be talking with your staff about the importance of case notes. You know, we're seeing, I'm getting calls or 211's getting calls. And it will appear as if like no contact has been made, or there's instances where a tenant is like right on the verge of needing a CAN referral, but there's nothing to indicate in HMLS there was any interaction with the CAN. You know, they don't have to be fancy, they don't have to be long, but really that documentation and that narrative, as you all know, is so, so important. And if you can just stress with your staff that they need to be entering those in, particularly for people if they say, you know, there's nothing more I can do for them, I'm referring them out, I'm referring them elsewhere. We really need to know that information. So I did want to have a little bit more conversation on the number of scheduled appointments per day. So like I said, in each of your regions, we're capped at 7, but I just want to bring back up the data. I know Amanda and Harford, you had really been pushing to cap it 5 appointments per day, because that's what you guys are doing with the CAN. So I'm looking for your feedback from all of you. You know, I'm hearing that your staff are overwhelmed by the inflow that's coming into them. You know, when I look at the daily averages, you know, what we're seeing on average, like we're not in, in most of the regions, except for like maybe one or two outlying days, like we're not exceeding 5 appointments. Often not even coming close to 5 appointments over the course of the past couple of weeks. So, you know, I'm not, as we talk about this, I'm not convinced that even lowering the number of appointments is going to change kind of some of those inflow problems that we're having. But I'm looking for your feedback based on what you guys are seeing on the ground.
So for Greater Hartford, it's capped at 7 referrals per housing specialist. I think that's reasonable because, you know, you have to understand that when each client tenant comes in, whether it's in person or it's a conversation on the phone, we're spending anywhere from half an hour to almost 1 hour with each of these client tenants, because they're in a position where they're anxious. You know, it's almost like we're housing specialists / therapists. Really shouldn't be that way, but you know, when a person is facing crisis, they tend to want to unload to someone who they perceive can help. So 7 is reasonable. I know you want more, Lee, but 7 is reasonable.
No, well, and Lorraine, honestly, I think my ask is, do we need to go lower than 7? You know, so like when you look in Hartford over the past 3 weeks, and this is total, you know, you've had at most 6 appointments per day.
Right.
So with the two, you have, Hartford happens to have 2 full-time staff. So I would, mm-hmm. I would assume, right, 3 appointments per person, with time follow up for any of the individuals who are outstanding at that point in time. So, I mean, but based on the numbers that I'm seeing now, you know, we could go down to a cap of 5.
Oh, I misunderstood. Okay.
But you know, even at a cap of 5, like we're not even close to that in many of the regions. Like I said, other than like a couple of outliers.
So keeping tabs to see if the number of appointments per day goes over 10, and it hasn't. So, I mean, we've been, you know, if that did start to happen, I think we were kind of anticipating maybe that the moratorium was going to end soon, you know, like, but stuff has gotten extended. So I think that the trickle of people coming into the program has been pretty low. Well, mm-hmm. Relatively speaking.
From what I'm hearing from the local providers, and obviously you all speak up if I'm misrepresenting, it sounds like while the actual number of CAN appointment, or CAN, whatever we're calling them, assessments are reasonable in the weekly basis, it's actually the caseloads that have become unmanageable. And I think the reason is that it's not like you do an appointment and then you're done. right? And so I think what's happening is it's the volume of follow-up, and majority of time it's follow-up with the landlord, the client, potentially to case management, then maybe to mediate. And so it's like just a lot of different things that you're managing that one client, you know, may take 4 follow-up calls per day. But if you have a caseload of 70 clients, which is what Northwest vocalized yesterday, then that's where I think it becomes unmanageable.
And I just want to throw in inspections on top of all of that you just said. It's a lot for one person. Yeah.
I think while it doesn't look like based off of these numbers, I'm like, no, we're good. Like, I don't think you need to decrease the appointments. But then I think hearing from the staff yesterday, I think it's less about the actual assessment and just everything else that follows with it. And so maybe it just means that, and this actually may be worse, Lee, so you tell me, but maybe we almost have where, you know, there's a day each week that there's no appointments, so you keep the same number, but that allows for like a catch-up day or whatever the case may be, because I think they're also feeling like maybe they can't catch up or something.
And motivated by Bobby Joe's plan, I feel like Bobby Joe's plan could help with a lot of this.
Agreed. Because yes, I agree.
I really think like if we can avoid, like Lorraine was talking about, that half hour, 45 hour long call where they're just telling you their whole life story, at least until we know they're eligible. And then we have all the paperwork already in hand. I think that will limit or reduce the amount of time that they're spending doing all that follow-up just to get that initial stuff, even just to determine that people are eligible.
I think just, part of the issue too, sorry, just to kind of follow up on what Jessica was saying, I think the program seems designed very linear, right? They do their intake appointment, they meet with the housing specialist, and then they're sent to mediation or to statewide legal services or to case management. And in reality, it's so back and forth because like we were talking about earlier, people think they want to move and then they decide, no, wait, I don't want to move. I want to mediate or even just mediate for more time so I can move later. So there is so much more back and forth than I was thinking when I saw the design of the program. I was like, okay, this seems pretty logical. And it's just so much. And I mean, it's day by day. Like I'll talk to people who were one day like, no, I want to move. I'm not staying here. And then a day later, they're like, no, it's all right. I can work it out. I can stay here. And so it's like different like paths each day. So, and I don't want to tell people like you have to pick one or the other, because obviously we want to do what's going to get you housed. But I feel like it's a lot of, it's involving people so much more than I think I was initially expecting when I saw the program. So that might be part of it too. I don't know. I mean, we don't have the housing coordinator, so Allison, I don't know if you have thoughts on that, but that's what it feels like to me. It's a little more like back and forth than I was expecting.
It is true. I concur. It's definitely more involved. It's not as cut and dry. Okay, I'm giving you 15 minutes and after 15 minutes, it's done. You know, we're dealing with people, not, you know, canned goods. So, you know, in order to kind of glean information from them too, you kind of let them go off. You want them to feel comfortable with you as well. Because this is, you know, it's a partnership. Yeah, it's a short-term partnership, but it's a partnership nonetheless.
Yeah. Nope, that's a great point. So, you know, there are some regions that have taken days offline to be able to do some of that catch up. So I think what we could do is twofold, right? So I think Bobby Joe's plan of sending those initial emails and letting that be the point of contact is probably a game changer, quite frankly, for like managing of the inflow. So I think if we move to that as the standard practice, along with looking at taking a day off of the schedule, just again, for like opportunities to catch up, paperwork, et cetera. I'm thinking that those two options will put your staff in a better position to feel more on top of the clients that they're working with. Does that sound?
Yeah, I like Bobby Joe's idea.
Okay. All right. So, you know, some of the data is all over the place, but it looks like Fridays tend to have the lowest inflow and number of appointments, particularly over the last 3 weeks. So we could make the decision now to take Fridays off of the schedule for all of the CAN regions. Or if you want to go back and talk with your staff about a particular day, I'm fine with that as well. I would just ask that we have kind of consistency across each of the CANs.
I can tell you now, I can speak on behalf of the staff, Fridays. It would be Fridays for South Parkin.
Okay. So Fridays on the table. Do I have agreement from everyone on this call? Is that the best day?
Yes, I agree. Fridays will work for us as well.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Speak now.
Can I just throw one monkey wrench?
No.
And Friday is fine. It makes no difference to me. I just want to throw out there, I just get nervous if we've got, because people are coming to HPP so far down the line, you take Fridays, you've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's a lot of time for a lot of things to happen. And I would just be nervous that if your last communication is Thursday and they have to be out by Monday, you've got no opportunity to do follow-up or I don't know, or whatever.
But I think this is, I mean,
we're talking about
just new people.
I guess the hope is you don't get somebody on Friday who has to be out on Monday. The reality is though, I think people are.
You are, but I think what's the other reality? You know, like, are we going to be able to serve those people? You know, I mean,
some of these people are magic workers. I swear to God, they email us for the can. And then 20 minutes later, they're like, never mind. I got it on hold for the marshal to come 2 weeks later. And I'm like, well, all right. So I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
We could make an exception for 211, like an urgent process. If there was a scenario where it's a Friday and someone's got an execution date for Monday.
Yeah, just go with whatever works. I'm just throwing out there that thought.
Right. And this is Laura from 211. Sorry, I'm in the car. But yeah, I mean, if you guys are open to us sending, you know, a Hail Mary asking for you guys to assist on a Friday, or the other thing I'm thinking about is we often have Monday holidays, especially this year with 4th of July and Memorial Day. So just to also have some, if there's any flexibility, if we end up blocking off Fridays going forward, if there's a holiday on Monday, would you be open to opening up, you know, the Friday before and things like that? But you know, from our perspective, if we want to cut back the appointments, we, you know, absolutely we can do that.
Yeah. So let's do this. I think just to keep it clean, I think we will take Fridays off the appointment schedule for new appointments. That doesn't mean that your staff are not obviously working with everyone else that's still in queue. And then I think, you know, Laura, if your staff are getting that call from someone who is urgently in need, you know, we can connect with the staff to see if they can work with them. And I'll send you an email, Laura, just as a reminder.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right. So we are short on time at the moment. So I am gonna hold off on talking about unresponsive landlords. We've already touched upon units that don't meet habitability standards, but actually I think the two kind of go hand in hand. You know, I think if we're getting landlords that are not responsive, I think we need to, again, to the best of our ability, I think it's having that conversation with a tenant to say, okay, like your landlord's not responding. At that point, you know, we're not going to offer rental arrearage. We can't offer mediation, right? Because it has to be a partnership if someone's going to get referred to mediation. So I think really at that point, the conversation with the tenant is, the most I can offer you is assistance with moving to a new unit. You know, if you're calling the landlord, emailing the landlord, they're essentially voting with their behaviors, right? About their level of participation. So I wouldn't wait. You know, certainly if you're getting an unresponsive landlord, those are probably also the individuals that I would refer to legal services as well. Because again, like I don't want that tenant to lose out on the opportunity for representation should the landlord decide to pursue the court process. So questions about that? Okay. And I see there's a lot going on in the chat in here as well. Casey, are you good with your question about the process for hiring a truck? So it's really just invoices from the moving company, but Maria, I'll let you also weigh in on the question about how to request those funds.
Yeah, my question really was kind of about the logistics of it and kind of what qualifies, because we have people saying like, oh, if I can just get a truck, I can have my friends help, which is great, that's cheap. Or like, I need a full set of movers, which is kind of easier because then it's all just like, you know, fine, we can hire movers. But a lot of the time, if you're renting a truck, they want a credit card to reserve it, but then it's like by the mile. And I feel like with a can, we've had this before where it kind of got a little bit confusing in terms of like some hesitancy to put the credit card there with sort of just this like, just let us know how much it is at the end kind of feeling. So I just didn't know if there was like guidelines around like how you're supposed to do it, or if we have any kind of agreement with any statewide movers that, you know, we could bill directly to us or anything like that.
We don't. I think one of you guys has already used moving company. Allison, was it new?
Bobby did it. Bobby used the movers. Yeah, so she could, what she did, she provided the receipt and her process went through. So, I mean, maybe she could explain how she used the movers, but her application went through and finance took it. So maybe Bobby could shed a light on how she did the process or how she used, what movers she used or what she did for us to process it through. But it's cheaper to use friends, but no, we need, you know, receipt to show proof.
But for hire, not to pay the friends, but to hire a truck, can they just hire a truck?
We need a receipt.
Yeah. Right.
But like from U-Haul or something, like, can you do, I just don't know. I think this is where I feel like it gets really.
Issue with U-Haul. You know. The issue with U-Haul is that the person who goes to U-Haul needs to be the person paying. So the only way we've been able to use U-Haul in the past is by buying gift cards, but that's not an eligible expense under this program. So it will be tricky if the client cannot use their card themselves or the agency can't go with them and pay. It's tricky to use U-Haul.
Okay. So really hiring movers is definitely going to be the easiest.
Yeah.
And you can find a moving, I mean, the moving company was able to give us an estimate and give an estimate initially, and then they give a final invoice, and that's how the payment, and then they just waited for payment impatiently.
Okay. And then if I was correct, Bobby, you also needed to provide a W-9, right?
Yes. Yeah. They have to provide a W-9. They have to provide the invoice and all that, but they were able to, you know, most movers are pretty good when you tell them that they will get paid. They just, you know, tend to overextend their estimates.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you so much. Yes, I am. Uh-huh. I am more clear.
You're welcome.
All right. So I know we're a couple minutes past 10.
Join the meeting.
So we can hop off. If there's anything else, you know where to find me, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. So thank you all, and talk to you soon.
All right, thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Have a good weekend, ladies.
You as well. Bye-bye.
And gentlemen.